Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is Rena Owen, returning to chat with us about season 3 of Siren on Freeform Television, which I believe debuts April 2nd. Rena, welcome.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for having me again. And yes, spot on. Our season 3 premiere kicks off Thursday, the 2nd at 9 p.m. on Freeform. And fans are in for a treat. They're going to be airing the first 2 episodes. So from 9, episode 1 at 9, episode 2 at 10. So you've got 9 to 11. You've got a whole 2 hours of Siren. Woohoo! We're all so excited. Can't wait to see it.
Now, season 2 ended with a whole lot going on. There was just so much happening and so much to absorb. Without going into spoiler territory, what sort of drama are we in for season 3 after everything happened?
Yeah, it was an epic season finale in season 2, and season 3 it doesn't change. There is just so much going on in episode 3. But I think one of the things, remnants of our season finale, is we all know that the storyline comes down to whether Ben is going to save the journalist Ian. And in a split moment, he has to make a decision, and he sees in his mind what could potentially happen if Ian was allowed to live, and would go on to expose Rin, and it go on to expose mermaids, and it turns into a pretty nasty situation. And then, thank God, we realize that he hasn't made that decision, and he makes the other decision, which is to let him basically drown, to let him die. So that is something that's not going to go away easily. It's something that's going to get dealt with very early on in season 3, because it's something that people know about, mm-hmm. and it will get dealt with. So that's an ongoing issue from season 2. The other ongoing issue from season 2 is we know that Ben's mother had started treatment of the mermaid stem cells in terms of helping her to become healed and potentially possibly to walk. So that is something that still hasn't been resolved. Of course, the big cliffhanger, besides Ben letting Ian drown, or essentially Ian die, is that we are left off with the image of the fact that one of Rin's fertilized eggs has been implanted into a hybrid, and that this baby, or this mer person, is alive, kicking and well. And as Brian says, we're going to have a full-blooded all of our own. So we know there's going to be a baby. And this, of course, has been exposed or revealed in the season 3 trailers, when indeed has a baby. It lives. She's reunited with her baby. That becomes the main storyline. The other main storyline, new storyline, is a top-level predator, a highly sophisticated mermaid comes to land. And I think her character introduction doesn't get any better for any character in cinema or television. They've shared the trailer with you, where literally she is faking herself to be an air hostess and jumps onto a private chartered plane with a few men, and the pilot's going to Seattle. And needless to say, she kills all men and puts on a parachute, and out she dives into the ocean and transforms into a mermaid. And I thought you couldn't have had a better character introduction. So that's going to happen in episode 1, and you're going to meet Tia. And as you've also learned from the trailers already, she's incredibly sophisticated. Unlike Rin, who we've met from day one, from her first encounter on land, and her having to kind of learn the basics of human language and human behavior and the things about clothes and all of that stuff, this one has come already very humanoid in a way that she's obviously her background, which you will learn a lot about, is that she has been in a situation where she has been highly evolved in terms of languages, in terms of being able to read, in terms of her skills. And the word Russia, of course, does come up in the part in some of the trailers. So that is a major storyline. We've also seen in the trailers that Helen's beloved Sarge is back. And we see Helen having her first encounter with Sarge under the water. So that is something very new, that Helen, Auntie Helen, goes under the water and has her first underwater experience. And she has a great journey with Sarge throughout the new season. We also see new players in the trailers. We see other mermaid tribes. And there's a couple of other players that have not been revealed yet, but on paper this says that there's going to be a lot of new players that come to town in season three. So like every season, it's packed. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on for all series regulars. The other thing that has been revealed in the episode description is Xander assumes more responsibility. And that's something that comes from season two, where it's planted towards the end there with Dale, with the sheriff, that Xander has potential. And instead of spending his life, you know, working behind the bar at the pub, the local bar, you know, he has potential to do something better. And so that seed is planted, and we see through the description that Xander is going to assume a lot more responsibility. I think they've revealed a lot in the trailers. And, of course, the big thing is, which is Helen shares the message from Sarge that war is coming. There's going to be a mermaid war. So there's going to be a lot of drama going down in season three.
Yeah, the one trailer I saw with, I think it was the one with the parachuting, I was like, mermaid bond? What?
Yeah, it's a fantastic sequence. It's just fantastic. It really is. And our producing director Joe Menendez always does a fantastic job of directing, and he directs our first episode and episode four and our season finale. And you know, an actor couldn't ask for a better introduction. I mean, that scene's going to be on her showreel forever. It's such a fantastic scene. It's fantastic.
Well, I know I'm looking forward to seeing season three, just because so many questions came up during season two. I mean, honestly, Bristol Cove is not big enough for eventually everyone's going to know about all of this. And how are they going to deal
Maybe.
With that? How? So I have questions, but I will try to be patient and watch the stories as they unravel. Now, how much of what you're hoping to get across to the fans do you think came across? Because Helen's got a journey coming up, as you said, and we have like Rin becoming a mom and all of just so much going on. And what do you see as Helen's biggest challenge for season three?
Oh, well, I think it's the same for most of the players. It's the threat. It's the threat of Tia, who's, she's already made it very clear in the trailers that she doesn't like humans, and she's literally wants to try and wipe them all out. So that is what everyone's going to be having to deal with. And it is particularly a threat to Helen, who is a hybrid. She can't just jump in the water and swim away. So Tia is a threat to everybody, but especially to the merwoman and merman and to the hybrids. Yeah, that's the biggest thing that everyone's going to have to deal with in season three, is the new badass. It's called Tia. It doesn't get any bigger than that, in terms of you've got somebody who, from what we've seen in the trailer, she's hoping that Rin will join her. But as the audience knows, through the course of the first few seasons, Rin's gotten quite attached to her human friends. So she doesn't quite see humans the same way Tia sees them. And that'll be a big part of Rin's journey, is trying to educate her to the fact that not all humans are bad. We know that Rin has no desire to kill humans. So that's the biggest threat to, not just to Helen, but to, as you've already kind of touched on, to Bristol Cove, to everybody. And I think we kind of pretty much know with every bad person or character, you know, if you don't join them, then you're on the takedown list. You know, you're either for them or you're not. And of course, Helen's never going to be Team Tia. She'll always be Team Rin. And so it is a matter of, kind of joining together to protect everybody and to protect Bristol Cove. Because a lot is at stake.
Mm-hmm. So I was talking to another TV addict like myself. I think it was after season two, and the description of how attached the merpeople become to certain humans, he was like, you know, this is kind of like how cats treat people. The cats own the people, and the people don't realize it. And I fell out laughing.
It's true. That's actually a great analogy. It's really true. They do get attached, and humans and hybrids might think that they're in control, but ultimately, and that's something Helen has come to learn, there is no controlling them. They're going to do, Rin's going to do what Rin's going to do. She can give her advice. She can do her best to protect her, but ultimately Rin's going to do what Rin's going to do. That's actually a really good parallel to how it is. And as you say, you know, the mer people do seek out user-friendly people. So that's a big part, always going to be a big part of who Helen is and her storyline journey, is she is a provider and a protector. She saves. She's family. She's family, and she will protect them to forever. They've become her family, and she's their family, and she's a sanctuary. And as I say, she'll always be a provider and a protector, and that's been her role with Rin and Rin's family and all of the Mer people that come to land. That will always be, you know, part of Helen's daily ongoing story has been a mermaid wrangler. A wrangling merman, you know, and protecting them and helping to provide for them. And they're an endangered species.
Yeah, they
and
are.
And this is something, you know, and this storyline kind of taps into all of that. In fact, you know, Helen in the trailer says to Rin, this child is your people's future hope, you know. She's the hope of her people because they've not been able to procreate. And that was something that was established in season two, which led to this whole IVF, was the fact that there was no procreation under the water because of the pollution caused by human beings.
Yeah.
That the waters were too polluted. So that's where the idea came from of like, well, maybe we should go into the IVF. So, you know, Rin tried multiple times and failed to get impregnated. So they do it IVF. And of course, you know, they come up with this idea, well, they can use the military facilities to extract the eggs, Rin's eggs, but they have to use the hybrid facilities to impregnate, to fertilize and impregnate the eggs. And of course, we get that very hilarious scene with the little plastic jar. And it's kind of edited well together in the trailer where they go, well, who's going to do it? And because Ben looks at Manny and Manny's going to, you want me to do it? And Ben goes, no. And then Helen goes, oh, for God's sake, I'll do it. So she gets the male sperm, which essentially then they're able to, at the military base, extract two eggs, fertilize them, put them into the protective chamber, get it to the hybrid ranch, prep Rin, unbeknown to Rin, to Helen, to Maddie and Ben, as the hybrids have this other plan, and even unbeknown, I think, to some of the hybrids, that the doctor and the guy, Brian, have this plan on the side that they're going to send these two eggs. They're going to get one of those eggs and one into one of their own kind. And that is successfully done. And Rin is not impregnated with the egg because the journalist, Ian, steals her. So, you know, the fact that he takes off with her and ultimately runs off the cliff is his own, is of his own creation. So, you know, one could be, well, you know, it was his fault anyway. But Ben is faced with that choice. Do I save him or do I let him die? So not an easy choice for anyone to make. But, you know, his loyalty is always going to be to Rin. And Ben goes on a really, I can't say too much about it, but he goes on to a really mind-blowing storyline in terms of what happens with Ben.
Yeah, I guess Ben is going to have to deal with some emotional fallout of his own because he let someone die. And that's, you know, for someone as empathetic as Ben is, that's not going to be easy for him to deal with. But I thought the storyline of the merpeople not being able to procreate because their environment had been so polluted was one of those, you know, 2x4s to the back of the head. Oh, crap. I never thought of that. And I just thought that was a genius storytelling angle. And it made it imperative for the merpeople and the hybrids and the humans to work together to continue the merpeople or lose them forever.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's happening a lot around the world with a lot of our older species in the animal kingdom. I mean, I was horrified to find out that, rhinosaurs are almost extinct. Lions, apparently. There are only 7,000 wild lions left in the world. I mean, there are a lot of species out there that are on the verge of extinction. A certain panther is almost extinct. It's kind of slowly but surely happened as their habitat for survival have been destroyed, mm-hmm. whether that's been rainforests or whether that's been deserts or whether that's been the wild or whether that's been the oceans. Mankind, in pursuit of making money, essentially, has destroyed a lot of the environment. You know, some people, it's interesting how some people have seen this kind of current coronavirus situation where it's like, you know what? People are commenting on it. And I see it on the news how clean the air is because there's very little traffic on the streets. And that kind of, you know, Mother Nature's getting a little bit of a reprieve with all of us staying at home. It's interesting times. But I think that's what's always been kind of quite extraordinary about our show, Siren, is that they've always, our creators, our writers, they've always kind of been ahead of their own time. And I remember once something was happening, and I was like, this is uncanny. It's like we'd already shot the season, and this was happening in the season, but it was actually happening in real life at the same time that our episodes were airing. It's always been that kind of show, that they've never shied away from sensitive topics, you know, whether it's the environmental issues or other issues. I wish there was some kind of alert going out at some point. And that's what happened in one of the episodes. But anyway, I digress.
Well, we will save the rest of the discussion about Siren Season 3 after the show has fired up. But you also appeared in a few episodes of The Orville, which is another fan favorite sci-fi show. Talk about your experience on that show, because a lot of people like that show for the humor and for the set design. And so talk a little bit about your experience there.
Well, first and foremost, Seth MacFarlane is a genius. You know, no doubts about it. He's, you know, and I hold him up there in high accord, just in the similar way that I would hold George Lucas and Steven Spielberg, who were visionaries and, you know, had unique and original and authentic voices to contribute to storytelling. And Seth MacFarlane is one of these kind of creators. He's a visionary, and he's incredibly prolific. I actually spoke to him about that, not knowing how he did it all, you know, because doing The Family Guy and the voices and the producing and the directing, and then he writes, he directs, he produces, and he plays the lead in The Orville, and he still does his CDs and his DVDs. And I'm like, how do you do it all, Seth? You know, it's just one of those prolific geniuses. And I first had the privilege of auditioning for him when I got called in for the pilot. And I read the pilot, and I thought, you know, I saw it then. I thought, wow, because the writing was so good, and it was so unique and fresh. And but it tried to honor its source of Star Trek. And I kind of knew, I said to my agent, I don't think I'm right for this character of the Doctor. I just didn't see it and couldn't feel it. But he said, yeah, but they really want to see you. So I went in and I auditioned. And I know I didn't get the role of the Doctor. But come episode 3, which was called About a Girl, they all said then, casting and said, oh, my God, we've got the perfect actress for that role. And so I went back in the room and read for Havina. And essentially it was one large monologue in a courtroom. And I booked the role. And we shot that scene, and we spent a whole day shooting it, because you've got to shoot all the other angles of the Orville crew, of the Mocklin judge, the Mocklin jury. You've got to do it multiple times from multiple different angles. And Seth character was behind my shoulder in the scene the whole time. And I remember at one point, after 8 hours of doing this, you know, you start to get a bit tired. And I remember doing the monologue yet again, and I blanked for this word, and in my mind I'm looking for this word, and he just said the word, and I said, thank you, that's what I'm looking for, and boom, I just was able to carry on. And it was just in an amazing sense of synchronicity, and it's an absolute joy when you can work with fellow creatives and be synchronized, because it really is like surfing a creative wave. And he just appreciated the way I worked and really loved what I did, and, you know, was a fan of my work. And so he wrote another episode for me in season 2, which was very flattering. And that episode was called Sanctuary. And I had a big storyline in that where he comes to find me, because there's issues going on, and he finds Havina in the sanctuary, which is full of a lot of Mocklin women, warriors, and there's a huge dilemma, and Havina has to make a choice of whether she'll go and support the Orville and its crew, and she does, and it's kind of like a United Nations scene, and it was shot in the most magnificent Disney music hall, which really is magnificent. And she, once again, he'd written me an amazing monologue. And on the way, though, on the way to this United Nations courtroom, you know, I discovered a Dolly Parton on his ship. And I deemed that Dolly Parton is the voice of our revolution. And it's just a great episode. It was so much fun. And then we go and we do the big speech, the big spiel there at the United Nations Light Council. And we don't win. And so the last scene is some of the members of the Orville are disappointed and thought I'd be just. But I'm like, no, we've taken one big step forward, and this is the way it is. Two steps backwards, one step forward, onwards we go, and it's a great character. And, you know, perhaps I'll come back in season 3. But she really is an awesome character. And, you know, a lot of skill goes into doing prosthetics. It's a job. It's a job, and it's mm-hmm. not a job everyone can do, because, yeah, you're sitting in the makeup chair for quite a long time, and you're literally, you can get quite claustrophobic once you've your eyes and your nose gets covered, and you just have to tap into your Zen experience and just, you know, breathe through it and get through it. And then once it's all done, you kind of forget it's even there. But yeah, prosthetics are not for every actor. And it takes at least 2 hours to put all my prosthetics on. I remember doing another sci-fi kind of realm was I did a reoccurring role on Angel, which is the WB show, mm-hmm. with David Angel, and I played Dinza, the goddess of all lost creatures. And that was the most elaborate prosthetic I ever done. That was a finger to toe and full body, and I had wings. And that took like 6 hours to put on, and it was an almost human creation, and it was the company who created it, Rob, and it was an amazing creation. But I wasn't sorry when the show got cancelled because, yeah, it's just prosthetics are demanding, so it's not something you want to do every day, you know. But I love working with Seth MacFarlane, and I think he's an absolute genius, and I just think he's... I feel very blessed that I get to work with them. You know, same with Siren. We have an amazing cast and crew, and, you know, our godfather, Eric Wald, our writer, executive producer, and our showrunner, Emily Whitesell, we're just blessed because they're all visionaries. You know, they're all visionaries. They're all ahead of their time, and we get to participate in these fantastic imaginary worlds, and we get to hopefully... you know, make a little difference here and there as well as entertain people. So I feel very blessed to do what I do because, you know, a lot of actors have given their lives to this profession and have never, you know, been in anything that's broken out. And not every TV series goes to season 3, let alone season 4. So I feel very, very blessed and... you know, it hasn't happened overnight. This industry is a marathon. It's not a sprint, as Russell Crowe told me many years ago. It's not a sprint. It is indeed a marathon. But if you hang in there and you persevere, and as long as your face still moves and you're recognizable, you work. If you're a good actor, you work. But I'm blessed. I also, you know, it's never above me the fact that I'm working when 97% of my acting population are out of work. And so I have everything crossed that I will do Orville again and that Siren will go to season 4.
So how are you holding up during this quarantine season?
Well, you know, initially it was like I'd come back to L.A. We finished Siren's shooting season 3 late December, and I came back into L.A., for Christmas. I had 2 weeks here and then I went down to New Zealand for 6 weeks because I hadn't seen my family and I hadn't been down there for a long time. And I finally got a summer and caught up with family and friends, and I still have property there, so it was good to take care of that. Then I came back into LA mid-February, gung-ho, ready for work that I had booked. And next minute, boom, everything's like on hold. And literally, it's just everything slowly and surely started shutting down. So the majority of my time back in LA has been on lockdown, and initially I was like, damn. But I thought, well, I'm finally going to get a holiday because I really haven't had a holiday where I've just gotten to blob out, be a couch potato, and so I've been watching, you know, because I don't. Usually I live an incredibly busy life and I'm production to production to production to production. And I've finally gotten to catch up on some television and also left huge backlogs of paperwork and stuff to sort out in L.A. because I've literally, like last year is a great example. We finished season 2 in March. I came in for a week to do a freeform event, dropped off bags, dropped off paperwork. Off I went to do a 3-month job in Tasmania on a mini series with Dan Australia, and that was an 8-episode series. And I was down there for 3 months. Came back in LA for 1 week, dropped off bags, dropped off more paperwork, then back to Vancouver. So the last few years with all of this nonstop working and travel, I've literally left piles of paperwork and luggage here in LA. So I'm like, okay. got no excuses now. You're going to have to do all this tedious stuff and take care of backlog. So I'm utilizing the time. I mean, yeah, do I miss getting out and about? For sure, I'm missing not being able to go to my yoga classes, my Pilates classes. My nails have gotten really long, so I'm just going to have to chop them myself, and that's okay. These are first world problems. You know, these are first world problems. I'm very blessed. You know, I have some savings, so I don't have to panic and I don't have to worry. But even if you don't have savings, it's never good to panic or worry, because the negative energy is just not good. You just got to stay positive to the best of your ability. So I'm okay. You know, I've been diligent. You know, I've worked a long time now and I've saved, because I'm also too of an age where I've had to start saving for a potential retirement. So that's what I've started to do already these past few years. So I'm okay. I'm okay. I also have the skills that I learned from theater. You know, when you work in theater, which I did for the first 10 years of my career, you learn to live a really good life with no money. Trust me. I lived the best, a frugal life, but it was the best life. Because you just, in theater, when you work and you train in theater, it's all about the nuts and bolts of acting. It's all about the nuts and bolts and the essence of your job, which is to serve our audience and to tell a story. And you don't get a lot of money in theatre. And I often juggled multiple jobs to pay rent whilst I did my passion. So I got really, really good at living a very disciplined life on a budget. And that never changes. Even if you are earning income, I still have those skills. And I'm not frugal when I don't have to be, but I'm not. I choose my moments of decadence. I don't waste, because I also know that you can have, as an actor, you can have a job today and tomorrow you don't have a job. And I've lived like that for 35 years, so I'm good at it. So 85 I started, 35 years I've worked and survived as an actor. And there were years I wasn't getting work. Oh, I'd get just the little odd job here, the little odd job there, and I became the queen of balance transfers. And I'm disciplined. I'm really disciplined at this. And so these are times where that discipline pays off, because I've got savings. I've got food in my fridge. You know, I value my life, so I'm not going to put myself in danger of getting sick. I can't afford to get sick. So I'm spending too much time at home, and then sometimes it gets to me and I miss hanging out with friends or miss just being able to, you know, go on a hike. Because at least I was able to do hikes for the first 2 weeks, and then our mayor shut down the trails because he realized everyone was hitting the trails because there was nothing else to do exercise-wise. So, you know, I'm okay. I'm using this time because I think once everything opens up again, it's going to be, we'll never go back to what it was. There's going to be a new norm. You know, there'll be a new normalcy. And whatever that looks like, I know that I've got work somewhere, somehow. I know that I've got work that got put on hold or got pushed, but will eventually happen. So I'll be okay. And it's something, you know, that I've had to develop as an actor to survive this industry. And it's not just for actors, it's for anyone out there. I live on faith, and faith is a personal thing, but I've always just lived knowing and trusting that it'll be okay. And that really, when I was younger, I'm better at it now that I'm older and more wiser, but now all we've got is this moment. You and me, here we are, we're talking on the phone. That's all we've got. And so that's all we should be consumed with. It can't be what, if you've caught too much in the past, then yeah, that's, you're talking regret and sorrows and things that you can't change. And if you're caught in the future, then you're caught in fear. So I can't be caught in either. I can't be caught in the regret of regretting the past, and I can't be caught in the fear of the future. The point of power is the present moment. All we have is now. And that's all that really matters. And I've always got this faith. I've always had this faith that I'll always be taken care of one way or another. And I always have. And I do believe, because I did hang in here, and I do say this to a lot of young actors, if you persevere, that's a big part of it. 40s were like a desert for me. Because in your 40s, as a female, you're too old to be the chicky babe. But you're too young. You're too young to be the old wise grandmother or the sage. So if you get to your 50s and your face still moves and you still know how to act, you will get work. And my mother always said that to me, you know, when I wanted to give up in my 40s because I wasn't getting much work. And she just would always say, just remember. She'd always go, just hang in there, girl. And just remember, Dame Judi Dench and Dame Helen Mirren did not get their Hollywood breaks till they were in their 50s. And here I am, finally in my 50s, getting my Hollywood breaks. So if I hadn't persevered, if I hadn't hung in there, if I hadn't disciplined to a certain degree, I wouldn't be reaping the rewards of that discipline and that tenacity and that perseverance. I hope that makes sense to somebody out there listening, because it's not just about acting. It's any discipline. It's anything that you're passionate about. If you believe in it, if you know that you're doing what you're meant to do, Providence will provide. Just keep the faith.
Yeah.
And stay healthy and stay safe.
Yeah, it's a different take on the Amazon warrior. The warrior woman, you have to just keep persevering through.
Yeah, you got to keep your eye, you know. It makes sense now to me when in my younger years would also just keep your eye on the bigger picture. And you're kind of not really sure, you know, because too much what they really mean. But you get here and it's like, yeah, I know exactly what keeping your eye on the bigger picture means. It's like you set out with this vision. You set out. You set out with a vision. You set out with a desire. You set out with a few goals and a dream. And that's what directs you. That's what directs your focus. And you keep your passion and your purpose. And, you know, impossible dreams exist to be created. And it's all possible. If you show up and you do your bit, and you're willing to compromise and you're willing to sacrifice, and that's any industry. Anybody who's been a success, they always say this. You look at their past and you'll see multiple failures, or you see multiple sacrifices. That's the game, and it's not a game. It's your walk in life. And there's really no competition. At the end of the day, the only person you're competing against is yourself. And that's in any industry, because there's only one of you. There's no one like you. There never has been. There never will be. You're 100% unique, 100% original. So there's only one of you. Nobody can do what you can do. Nobody sees and perceives things the way you see and perceive things. That's you. That's you. You're already winning because you're 100% original. And so be the best you and do what you believe you've been put on this planet to do. And try and do good along the way. You know, we all make mistakes. We all have our F-ups. God knows I've had a few. But, you know, you get up and you carry on and you do better. And life is good. Life is good. And you know, we have all this time right now. And I feel more. Because I can share this with you. I had been cast to do the voice in a new video game, to play one of the lead roles in this new video game. Really, really cool video game. And, you know, I'd got an email from one of the creators, and he was devastated, and he said, I'm so sorry to have to tell you that we've all been made redundant. So that's the end of the game. And he said, I feel so sorry. We feel so bad because you put all this time into it. You did the audition, you believed in us, you believed in the project, and I'm just devastated, and I feel so sorry, and I'm so sorry. And I just emailed them back, and I said, listen, don't worry about me. I said, I'm more sorry for you guys being made redundant. You know, and that's who I really feel for in these times, is that, you know, I think about our waiters and our waitresses. Those people who serve us at cafes where we buy our coffee or buy our lunch. You know, I think of all those people who've lost their jobs. That's the real thing to worry about. What I'm going through is a norm for me. This has been part of my life as an actor and as a creative. I've often had long periods where I've stayed at home and I haven't had a job. But, you know, the job, our work as creatives, and you'd know this, as a self-employed creative, we never stop working. Because there's all that other stuff, like what I'm doing now, taking care of tax returns, taking care of backlogs of paperwork, lining up some content for social media. I'm still working. It just happens to be from home right now. So nothing's really changed for me. But for those that have been dependent on an employer and on jobs to go to, I feel really, really bad for them. You know, I really do. And we've seen it in the unemployment figures, and we've seen it in just the people have been devastated. But a lot of good will come out of this. It always does. You know, those things that really challenge people and throw things upside down, and you have to find new ways to rebound. As I say, for me, and I think for a lot of creatives, staying home is not a new thing for us because the bulk of our work happens at home. Even when I'm on location in Vancouver, I'm working mostly from home. I'm reading scripts, I'm learning lines, and then, yes, you go to set and you do those scenes and you deliver those lines, but the rest of the time you're working from home. So you work from home. You know, a lot of us creatives, we're okay because we keep working. We may not be getting paid for it right now, but we will get paid for it eventually. It will pay off.
Well,
Stay hopeful.
There you go. Where can people find you on social media? Because I hope you're sharing some of these tidbits of wisdom on either like Twitter or Instagram or something like that.
Yeah, I've got to start doing that. You know, at the moment, I am on Instagram at Rena Owen, and I've got, of course, the verified blue tick. And it's Rena Owen on Twitter, and Facebook, it's the Rena Owen. But they're all very, look for the blue tick. But I am going to, at the moment, I've been mostly sharing about Siren and helping to promote the fact that our season's going to premiere. But I have kind of come up with something because I have a lot of throwback pictures and great photos, because back in the 90s and that, we used to do great photo shoots. I have great photos to share. And I kind of haven't really shared them because I thought, well, they're 30, 20 years ago, and I don't kind of look like that anymore. And I wanted to represent myself authentically. But I kind of had this thought over the holidays. I thought, well, over the, you know, Christmas break, I thought, you know, I can use the throwbacks and kind of go, here's a little lesson, life lesson, something that I learned. You know, for one of them, I thought, you know, the lesson for all of us, particularly for women, we don't realize what we've got until it's gone. We don't know how damn hot we were when we were teenagers or in our 20s. And that is true for women and for men. You get to your 40s, your 50s, you're losing your hair, you're going gray, whatever. Some people are losing teeth. You don't know what you've got until it's gone. So, you know, I thought little things like that, the pills of wisdom, of, you know, just I can start sharing with, you know, here's my lesson for this throwback picture, relish your 20s or relish your 30s or relish your agility or whatever, you know, get with a, yeah, I thought I should start doing that. But right now I'm just kind of building up to, I have been sharing behind the scenes photos from Siren Season 2 and kind of helping to promote and get it out there that, hey, Siren 3 premiere this Thursday, 9 p.m. freeform, and two episodes, episode 1 and 2, and it's going to be exciting to see two episodes back to back. It's going to be awesome.
Nice.
So tune in, people, and just take care and stay well and stay safe.
We will have links to your social media posts and to really push people to go start watching Siren Season 3. And I will tell you from a personal perspective, if you start posting any behind-the-scenes photos you have from when you were on Angel, I would be so giddy. You wouldn't believe it. I love that show. I love Angel more than Buffy, just saying.
You know, here's the one problem with that is like it wasn't the age of digital. You know, we didn't have phones and we didn't take photos. It was God, that was back in the 90s. And you know, because somebody was asking me, have I got photos from that era? And I go, yeah, I do, but they're in storage in Auckland because that was pre the age of digital. You know, there's stuff. It's even like Star Wars. I mean, I only have a couple of Polaroids because we just didn't take photos. We didn't have phones that took photos. You know, we didn't have social media. So we just didn't do that. I mean, God, you know, in hindsight, you know, I would have been all over these people I had the privilege of being in the company of and just being a total groupie and had all these photos, but you just wasn't. And back then, though, we did photo shoots and we did press junkets, you know. So there's one photo of the character, which was someone had made as a screenshot, and that's about it. And I should pull that one out. I should pull photos out of Dinsa. I've probably got a couple, but yeah, from the makeup truck, but not from actually on set. Because even I did have, you know, I've always had a camera, but it was very clear back then you weren't allowed to take a camera to set. But I've got some photos of Dinsa. So yes, I will. I've got to see. This is what I'm actually doing too with this time at home. Once I get through tedious paperwork, I'm going to start sorting through my whole photo library that I've had on my laptop since 2000 and bringing out good old photos that people may appreciate. So thank you for that tip.
I am glad I could push you to indulge the incessant cravings of the geek fan. But thank you so much
You're so
for.
welcome. In fact, I might actually have a photo of David. I'm just because we also did Crow. We did the Crow together. Remember Crow with the prayer? He was in that. Yeah, that's I worked on that. I just don't know though if it was a hard copy photo. Then they're all in storage, packed up. So I only kind of use the photos that I've got on my laptop. But God, if this goes on all year, then I'll have time to bring out those trunks and go through them. But I'm starting with one box at a time right now, and it's called Tedious Tax Stuff and Receipts. All right.
Yep. Pace yourself. Just pace yourself. That's all I'm saying. Pace
Exactly.
yourself. Stay
I will. But
hydrated.
if we're locked up for a long time, then I'm going to get into those damn trunks. I'm just not going there right now. All right. I haven't got enough floor space.
Fair enough. Fair
Right,
enough.
honey. You take care.
Thank
Always
you.
great. Always great to talk to you. And take care and stay healthy. Stay safe.
You too. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi. A lonely alien pet bravely waits for the family that may never return. An astronaut with seconds to live discovers just how good victory can taste. A mecha pilot and an aristocrat strike up an unlikely friendship. Take a ride with Escape Pod, the Hugo-nominated weekly science fiction podcast, at escapepod.org. Every week, we'll launch you into an alternate reality. So buckle up, it's story time.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of Slice of Sci-Fi.
If you haven't started watching Siren, this might be a good time to start. These stories are getting really good. The cool thing about new shows coming on is I have email. Shane is agreeing with a previous assessment about Vagrant Queen. He writes in, 3 episodes into Vagrant Queen on Sci-Fi. Damn, I love this show. goofy, fun, cheesy. Great aliens, planets, just fun sci-fi that I've missed. A little Firefly, a little Buck Rogers. It's the sci-fi I needed, and I highly recommend it. Thank you, Shane, for your thumbs up on Vagrant Queen. And Bruce writes in about something completely different. This year is the 50th anniversary of Apollo 13, the original flight. And then he wanted to plug a website called apolloinrealtime.org, which is actually tracking the original Apollo flights from Apollo 11, Apollo 13, and Apollo 17, and in what would have been real time during their actual flights. So he's saying, I would also like to point you in the direction of the BBC podcast 13 Minutes to the Moon, Season 2, currently in weekly release. This also deals with Apollo 13. Season 1, naturally enough, covered Apollo 11 and was released during that 50th anniversary. So, thank you, Bruce. He says, keep up the good work on Slice of Sci-Fi. It's one of many podcasts I enjoy listening to while carrying the mail on my route. Thank you for carrying the mail. Let's hope we still have mail going into the future. There's some shenanigans going on in Congress. They did it before. Maybe we can fix it. Anyway, not going there. This is not a politics show. I avoid politics because we need a happy, fun place to escape to. And even though science fiction delves into potential alternative takes of the realities we live in that are dangerous and contentious, people get a little edgy when it gets a little too real. However, if you haven't noticed, planet Earth is hella pissed with us. It's like 2020 turned over and Mama Earth said, nah, y'all knuckleheads, gotta learn a lesson. So we have pandemic, we have floods, we have tsunamis, we have landslides, we have wildfires going on near a still contaminated radioactive site. Yes, people, in case you hadn't seen the news, Chernobyl is on fire. I can't imagine the logistics that go into fighting wildfires in a highly radioactive zone. We have earthquakes, and now we have volcanoes going off in Indonesia. We had like 5 eruptions in like a week or 10 days or something. One of them being Anak Krakatoa, the island that rose up out of the sea after Krakatoa destroyed itself. What was that, 1888, 1883? Yeah. An explosion so loud, people in Europe heard it. We have pissed off Mother Earth, and we should just start, you know, I'm not one for animal sacrifices, but, you know, if we start, like, giving our own blood, you know, cutting our own hands, you know, doing the whole blood brother thing, going, Mama Earth, please, we're sorry, we'll fix it. Anyway, yeah, it's gotten to the point where writing horror stories just can't compete with reality. I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around this. Horror stories just seem blasé right now, and that doesn't bode well for the stories I've been writing, because you write a story and you look up, oh, something happened, either natural or man-made. That was like, literally, it's like the universe read the story I was writing and said, nah, hold my beer. But we keep writing stories. We keep looking for stories to experience. And I don't know. Are we going to run out of stories to binge? I hope not. Anyway, that's my minor little, I want my horror stories to cuddle up against rant for today, for this week. Good news, the Hugo nominations for 2020 are out. There are quite a few items of note. Watchmen got nominated for one of the Watchmen episodes got nominated for a Hugo. If I remember correctly, an episode of Doctor Who was also nominated. Nope, my bad. One episode of The Expanse and two episodes of Watchmen were nominated. That is hella fun. The movies that were nominated were Avengers Endgame, Captain Marvel, Good Omens, Us, Russian Doll, and Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker. I'm kind of hoping it goes... I will be happy if it goes Good Omens or Captain Marvel. Just saying for that. Graphic novels, the only one I have read that was nominated is Monstrous, Volume 4. Best Related Work, Straczynski's memoir, Becoming Superman, was nominated. And if you want to hear a discussion about that book, you can head on over to BabylonPodcast.com. Last fall, during the Return from the Room series, Tim and I did talk about that book. So you can head on over there and check out the discussion about that if you're so inclined. The Worlds of Ursula K. Le Guin, the documentary I actually interviewed the director for last year, that was nominated. What else do we have that's really, really cool? Yes, I am. I'm stalling because I'm trying to not get too overly excited. But Escape Pod, which is the science fiction short story podcast that I've been do audio production for, got nominated in the Best Semi-Prozine category. And my name is in the nominations, and I'm still trying to wrap my brain around that. The people named for Escape Pod are editors Mer Lafferty, longtime friend of the show, SB Divya, assistant editor Benjamin Kinney, audio producers Adam Pracht and Summer Brooks, and hosts Tina Connolly and Alistair Stewart. Alistair also was nominated in a fan writer category, so props to him for putting in all that hard geek work. But the other semi-prozine story shows that are ones that I listen to. Strange Horizons, Uncanny Magazine, Fireside Magazine, Fia Magazine of Black Speculative Fiction, and Beneath Ceaseless Skies. So a lot of strong competition there. But yeah, oh my God, my name is on a Hugo nomination list. And just the stories over at Escape Pod are fun to listen to and to put those shows together. You should check those out. All of the shows over at Escape Artists are fun to listen to. You got Escape Pod for science fiction. You got Pseudopod for horror, which is some kick-ass storytelling. If you like your horror fiction in short story audio format, there's Podcastle for fantasy and stuff that doesn't quite fit into the science fiction or horror genre. And I'm missing one. Cast of Wonders, which is YA focused. And a lot of those stories are adorable. And if you are interested in crazy Twitter entertainment, follow the Twitter accounts for Escape Pod and for Pseudopod, because they will get into conversations with each other that are absolutely absurdly delightful. Every now and then, like Podcastle will join in and they'll have conversations about the spaceship, who will like bother the dragon and steal the dragon's gold. And then one of the cosmic horror entities will scold them. And it's just a lot of fun. It's crazy. And it's the sort of absurd sci-fi entertainment with a social media edge that we need these days. So once again, go follow the Twitter accounts of Escape Pod and Pseudopod and prepare to be entertained. So if you have any questions or comments about what to watch during these lockdown days, feel free to call in. The number is 602-635-6976, or you can email summer@sliceofsci-fi.com, just like Bruce did and Shane. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi through Apple Podcasts, through Stitcher, through Google Play, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio Podcasts. And if you could, please leave a review, a rating, on either Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher. Let people know that you are enjoying the show and encourage them to check it out too. You can follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. We're also Slice of Sci-Fi over on YouTube and Facebook. And of course, the hub of all this geeky madness is sliceofsci-fi.com, the website. Come on by, leave a comment, leave a question about any of the interviews we've done, or leave your own take on a review that we've done. Going to have some more reviews, indie horror and indie sci-fi reviews coming up. Whole bunch of movies that I have to get through this coming week. So stay tuned for those. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently helping to support keeping these shows and these websites online. Your pledges through Patreon and your donations through PayPal truly, truly do keep the lights on around here. Without your help, it would be a lot harder to keep these shows online. So again, I thank everyone. The place to go if you want to add your support is Patreon, patreon.com. Patreon.com/sliceofscifi, or if you just want to donate every now and then, the link to use is paypal.me/sci-fi summer. And I should say that, oh my god, I got a response this time. Our April perk winner is Frank. Frank won himself a copy of the Blu-ray combo pack for Teen Titans Go versus Teen Titans, a DC animated feature that came out last year. So, Frank, that will be on its way to you. And hopefully it will be safely delivered to you post-haste. But that'll do it for this episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.